suitors list of 10 and 10 subjects and discussing characteristics of different types of Puranas and the idea that how the subjects are ordered in throughout the Srimad Bhagavatam. So now in 62 and 63, Jiva Goswami is going to discuss the 10, those 10 subjects as given by Suta Goswami, in the same way that he discussed Sukadeva's list of 10. In other words, there's a series of verses in Srimad Bhagavatam, as we mentioned yesterday, in the 7th chapter of the 12th canto, right at the end. So there's another series of verses which list out the 10. First of all, as we read yesterday, there's a verse or a couple of verses which are just listing them out. And now 62 and 63 consists of the further verses. There's about another several verses or so, which goes through one by one and elaborates a little bit on each one. And then just like with Shukadev, how there was, he had I think three or so verses which were just focusing on the Ashraya. So similarly, Suta Goswami has three verses also. The first nine are dealt with more briefly, but then the last one, which he calls Apashraya, which is the same thing really, the ultimate shelter, like that. So the last one, Apashraya, is discussed in more detail in three verses there in the 7th chapter of the 12th canto. So, let's read through 62. Oh, and as he does this, he explains a little bit, or just points out really, how, even though many of these 10, as given by Suta, many of them have names that we're not really familiar with compared to Shukadev's list, but he draws out how they are the same, really. How when Suta says whatever, something, then actually it includes Shukadev's this and this, like that. You know, so he covers all of them, basically. So we end up with Suta's list of 10 and then Shukadev's, and we see they're the same. They're actually covering the same things. Nothing is left out in either list, and there is nothing in either list which the other list does not have. So what does that mean? It means six of one or half a dozen of another. I mean, basically means that they're the same, but just presented a little differently. And, you know, we shouldn't feel disturbed about that. I don't really think you will, but we shouldn't, because, you know, sometimes it's like that. For example, in the description of the creation, or by that I mean the sarga part, the primary creation from the Lord up to the point of the appearance or birth of Brahma, Prabhupada himself explains, or we see in the Bhagavatam, that there are a couple of descriptions in a couple of different places of how the Lord glances on the pradhan, that unmanifest state of matter, and then this comes out and that comes out, and you know, there's a whole procedure that develops as different particular ingredients manifest. But you know, there are a couple of descriptions like that in detail, but they're a little different from each other. meaning like the sequence, what comes first, what comes second, and, you know, like that. At some point, they become a little different from each other, and Srila Prabhupada makes the point that this happens. Sometimes, it's not always, you know, just like if you switch on a machine that just, you know, one thing just leads to another, it's always the same. In this process, in these processes, sometimes there are differences in the details of like the order of things and so on like that. But it all, it's just the Lord bringing things to the same point. They do come to the same point. So therefore we shouldn't really worry too much if there are some differences. And Jiva Goswami will show us how, really speaking, there aren't. Now, did you all sign in? I'm sorry that I forgot yesterday to hand this out. But I think a few of you haven't signed, have you, or have you all? One didn't. I mean, I don't think it's the end of the world, but maybe you can just give it back to her. Right, so let's start going through 62 then. 62.1. Suta Goswami then describes the features of the 10 topics, beginning with creation. So, of course, thank you. We should remember. Just bear a little bit in mind what our list of 10 is. Okay, creation. From the agitation of the original modes within the unmanifest material nature, which means the pradhan, the mahatattva arises. From the mahatattva comes the element false ego, which divides into three aspects. This threefold ego further manifests as the subtle elements, as the senses, and as the gross sense objects. The generation of all of these is called creation, sarga. So that's 12.7.11. Next verse, after the first two, 12.7.9 and 10, which we read yesterday. So it's the same, isn't it? It really is the same. Well, it's even got the same name for that matter, so you'd expect it to be the same, and it is. Jiva Goswami explains, the mahatattva comes into being when the original dormant material nature, pradhan, is agitated. What agitates it? The glance, okay. What about the glance in particular? Kala Shakti, yeah. Particularly the Kala Shakti stimulates the pradhan. The mahatattva, yes, sir. Okay. And from the from this threefold ego come the subtle elements, the senses, and the physical elements. The appearance of the elements implies the appearance of their presiding deities as well. Altogether, the appearance of these constitutes sarga, the manifestation of the subtle causes of creation. So that's, you know, relatively straightforward and is just the same, really, as what Sukadeva Goswami says. So here, actually, in 62, we are going to find that, let's see, seven of these 10 are discussed. The first seven. Sarga Visarga Vritti Raksha Antarani Vangsa and Vangs Anucharita. Okay. 62.2. Visarga. Suta Goswami continues. The secondary creation, which exists by the mercy of the Lord, is the manifest amalgamation of the desires of the living entities. Just as a seed produces additional seeds activities that promote material desires in the performer produce moving and non-moving life forms. It's 12:7-12. Here the word purusha, person, refers to the supersoul, and etesham of these indicates the elements beginning with the mahat. The primary reason the elements combine is the karma the jivas have accumulated from their previous lives. Thus, the moving and non-moving living beings take their births in a perpetual cycle, like the generation of one seed from another. This constant flow of generated objects is called visarga, secondary creation. In other words, visarga is the creation of the individual organisms, and thus, this discussion of visarga includes the topic of uti, impulses for activity. So we can see, isn't it, that the same thing is being discussed, the work of Lord Brahma, but in a somewhat different way. Although actually he's talking about the same phenomenon, why does Lord Brahma do his work of creating, taking it from the point that the Lord kind of left off at? Why does he do that? It's because of all these, it's because of us, all these conditioned souls. Yeah, all these conditioned souls are there. The Lord initially glanced, and the Kala Shakti began this whole process of Pradhan, dividing itself up into all the different component elements and so on. But the whole idea, actually, the whole idea or the ultimate idea is not just to get matter to unfold itself. The whole idea is that we'll end up with universes and planets, so all the living entities who are also in the glance, they can come out and continue on with their activities. That's the whole idea. They need it because, as we said, it's like they're cocooned in their karma. Yeah, they're cocooned in their karma. So, you know, when you really get down to it ultimately, and it is inferred in the verse itself, the Bhagavatam verse, what really the idea is behind this whole process of sarga and visarga is the Lord wants to give the living entities the opportunity to get liberated or to go back to Godhead. And in fact, you know, well, it doesn't come out so much here directly, but elsewhere, like in Brahma Samhita, for example, where this process of the kind of evolution of material nature is described in detail, there it's brought out very clearly that the Lord's desire is he wants the living entities to get the opportunity to go back to Godhead. That's really what he wants. Not just to live out their karma further or, you know, something like that. But actually he wants them to get the chance to go back to Godhead, which they don't have when they are within him. So now I said that in this, the Bhagavatam verse here, that is also inferred. So even though Jiva Goswami, he says this is visarga, but it includes uti in the form of the karma of the living entities, which it just is sort of a transformation of their desires. But it's mentioned here that the secondary creation, visarga, which exists by the mercy of the Lord. So, you know, I'm not trying to say that we know better than Jiva Goswami, but the verse mentions the mercy of the Lord. And this is the understanding, actually, behind the whole process of material creation, as we mentioned. So, you know, I would say it's arguable that this visarga also could be taken to include poshana. But anyway, he includes uti, because the karma of the living entities, as we also discussed a few days ago, karma and desire is essentially the same thing. Just two phases of the same thing. You desire, you do. The doing is just your desire in action. And then the karma comes. So the karma is ultimately simply a reflection of your desire. You know, generally you don't do something unless you desire it. I think it's quite unusual that you do things robotically or, you know, like that, just totally mechanically. Generally, you only do things you desire. So therefore, you can come to the point of saying desire equals karma in the long run. Really, your karma is simply reflecting your desires. Now, if you've got a lot of bad karma, that means what? You did a lot of bad things. So why did you do all those bad things? It's because you had a lot of bad desires. That's the basic idea of material life. Yeah. So therefore, this mention of karma, that the whole secondary creation, you know, particularly in the sense of getting the bodies organized and different levels of planetary systems, all this work of Lord Brahma, it's all in terms of the karma. You know, you've got this karma, so you go to the heavenly planets. You've got that karma, you go to the hellish planets, and so on like that. So, it's just, you know, describing the activity of Lord Brahma without mentioning Lord Brahma so much. Okay, so then 62.3. Vritti means the process of sustenance by which the moving living beings live upon the non-moving. For a human being, vritti specifically means acting for one's livelihood in a manner suited to one's personal nature. Such action may be carried out either in pursuit of selfish desire or in accordance with the Vedic injunctions. That's 12.7.13, the next verse in the Bhagavatam. Jiva Goswami comments, mobile living beings generally thrive on immobile ones, but the word cha in this verse hints that when the desire impels them, moving creatures will also subsist on other moving creatures. For human beings, however, the means of livelihood is prescribed according to their individual natures on the basis of either selfish desire or scriptural injunction. All this is called vritti. So it is Jiva Goswami in his commentary mentions that this is like an aspect of sthana, maintenance. Of course, maintenance ultimately means the victory of Lord Vishnu, stiti, the victory of Lord Vishnu, Vaikuntha Vijay. So there's an implication of that here, in that the human beings may act either in pursuit of selfish desire, in other words, they just do their own thing without worrying about any rules, and then they, by the arrangement of Lord Vishnu, they take the consequences. Or they act in accordance with the Vedic injunctions in a pious way and get, you know, elevated and so on by the mercy of Lord Vishnu. So Lord Vishnu is victorious one way or the other. You know, whether you try and sidestep him by doing your own thing, he still ends up controlling you. And whether you follow his injunctions and by his mercy you get some good result, well, he's controlling you in that way. Okay. 62.4. In each age, the infallible Lord appears in this world among the animals, human beings, sages, and demigods. By his activities in these incarnations, he protects the universe and kills the enemies of Vedic culture. This is called Raksha. It's 12.7.14. Here the word Yai, by them, means by the incarnations. This definition of protection, Raksha, also incorporates the three topics Ishakata, narrations about the Supreme Lord, Stana, maintenance, and Poshana, nourishment or mercy. So there you go. Look at that. Three in one. Three in one. So Raksha means the appearance of the Lord. And when he does it, he protects the universe. He protects the devotees particularly. So that's Poshana, his mercy. And, he protects the whole universe, even, which is Stana, and kills the enemies of Vedic culture. That's also part of Poshana, protecting the devotees. So this is Raksha. So Raksha includes Ishakata, Stana, and Poshana. In each reign of Manu, Manvantara, six types of personalities appear as manifestations of Lord Hari. The ruling Manu, the chief demigods, the sons of Manu, Indra, the great sages, and the partial incarnations of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Now it's interesting to note, just a small point, that in his list of 10, Suta Goswami said Antarani. You remember that? He didn't say Manvantara. I actually wrote up Manvantara, but it was a mistake. It's Antarani. That's what appears in the list. But here in this verse, he himself says Manvantaranam. So specifically referring to the Manus. So in the description of Shukadeva Goswami, it was basically the same thing but a little different. Here, Suta Goswami, Shukadeva talked about the Manus, great kings, and other people like that. The devotees even, and their preaching work. So here Suta Goswami lists out in more detail the particular types of people who come on behalf of the Lord to establish religion, protect religion, and like this. So there's six categories. It's not just the Manus and the saintly kings and the devotees, but there are these six categories. The Manu, the main demigods, the sons of Manu, Indra, the sages, and the lesser incarnations. From the mention here of the activities of the Manus and the others, it is understood that the topic of Saddharma, progressive religious principles, is also covered. They appear as manifestations of Lord Hari. So I take it that when he says that from the mention here of the activities of the Manus, they appear as the manifestations of Lord Hari. So it's understood that, you know, they don't just appear. It's not just like historical records of these different types of people. But specifically, it's in terms of them giving progressive religious principles. So in this way, the Manvantara description of Suta and the Manvantara description of Shukadev, they're the same. So we have covered, what, about how many? Five so far, I think. And Jiva Goswami already says, in this way, this list of 10 topics is equivalent to the one given earlier in the Bhagavatam. Of course, that's basically the idea. (clears throat) 62.6. Looks like it's going to be a shorter session this evening. Dynasties, Vansha, are lines of kings originating with Lord Brahma and extending continuously through past, present, and future. The accounts of such dynasties, especially of their most prominent members, constitute the subject of dynastic history, Vanshyanu Charita. And Jiva Goswami says, the activities of the Vansha, the Vanshadhara, prominent members of those dynasties, constitutes Vanshanucharitam. So he doesn't mention it here, but it's mentioned in his commentary that this is a form of Ishanukata, in the sense that these great kings, they're originating with Lord Brahma. So they're great devotees. Ishanukata is descriptions of the Lord, but also of the great devotees. Not just about their teachings. The Manvantara subject covers more of their teachings, but the Ishanukata is more like Leela, their activities and pastimes. So therefore, we end up with, well, I'll just write it up on the board. So we end up with, we have Suta here and Shukadev here. Then we end up with Sarga and Sarga. This Sarga, oops, where are we going? This Sarga and this Sarga, but also Bhuti. Then Vritti and Stana, Laksha, Ishanukata, Stana and Poshana, Vansa, Vansanucharitam, and they're both Ishanukata.
How's that? It's all tying in. We've got seven of suttas, and how many have we got of Sukadevs? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven. Yeah, we got seven also. They're just arranged differently. Am I right? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Yeah. Did I make a mistake? Six in Sutta? Oops. Oops. Sorry, it left out. Sorry about that.
Five.
Oops. Five is Manvantara. And five is also Manvantara. And that's six and that's seven, right? But that's legible enough.
Manvantara.
No. Yesterday, there was a list of the ten, including of Sutta. This is the first seven. So this is the first seven of that list of ten. The other list was a list of five, which are those which are included in the regular or lesser Purana. Yeah. You know, the only other list of ten we have is Shukadev's list. So there are two lists of ten, and there's also one list of five. Yeah. That was from the Matsya Purana, the five, yeah. So, yes. No. Question is, does Shukadev list Ishanu Katha twice? That's your question, yeah? Does he? Is that your question? What's your question? Okay. All right. There is a reason. I think I was hoping we would have got the reason. That is that there's overlapping. There's overlapping between Sutta's list and Shukadev's list. In that, Sutta's list, sometimes you find two things of Shukadev's are included under one heading of Sutta's. But then sometimes you find, you know, perhaps one thing of Sutta's, like the other way around, yeah. So it's overlapping like that. So therefore we have, you know, Ishanu Katha is coming up in three. Raksha, Vangsa, and Vangsa Anucharitam. The elements. In Raksha, the Lord appearing and protecting and killing the demons and so on. There's Poshana, there's mercy that he does that. Then there's just Ishanu Katha, the story of how he does it. And Stanam, the victory of Lord Vishnu. Lord Vishnu maintaining everything and maintaining the whole universe. That's there under Raksha. So it's like that.
So these two lists is given in relationship to each other.
Yes, these are in relation with to each other. The idea is to show how Sukadev Goswami's list of ten, the first one, and this list, which we're looking at now, Sutta's, actually they're the same. In that you'll find that Sutta, you know, what he calls one thing has elements, not necessarily everything, but elements perhaps of two. But then you'll find that other elements of those two will not exactly fit into that, or, you know, maybe they'll just also be found in another one of suttas. You get the idea? Yeah. Oh, I see. Well, that's all an interesting question. Why? Why did they do that? Are they trying to confuse us or something? Well, frankly, I don't know why. I haven't seen a description of why. But, you know, the principle I take to be, like the principle or maybe you weren't here, but Prabhupada, There are different descriptions of the, like the sequence involved in the process of sarga in the Bhagavatam. Yeah, different sequences in different places. Prabhupada says that there's at least one purport in which Prabhupada says that, you know, it is not that he points out the fact that actually, you know, this is different from how it was described elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, but that's okay because, you know, it's not like the Lord is just bound to mechanically do step by step every detail of the process of creation in the same way. He's bringing it to the same point where Lord Brahma will appear. But, you know, he may do it this way or that way, in this sequence or that sequence. So similarly, there appears to be some, you know, like flexibility. And, you know, we also got a hint of that yesterday, although we didn't mention it, that Suta Goswami, when he is listing out the ten, his ten, and, you know, then Jiva Goswami is mentioning the other ones, the other five, then, what did he say? This is 61.1. In the two verses quoted, Suta Goswami says, O Brahman, authorities on the matter understand a Purana to constitute, to contain 10 characteristic topics. Then he lists out the 10, but then if we go down to the end of the translation, he says, other scholars state that the great Puranas deal with these 10 topics, while lesser Puranas may deal with 5. So first of all, authorities, you know, these are important people, they say Puranas have 10 topics. But then other people say that Mahapuranas have 10 topics and other Puranas have 5. Now, what position does Jiva Goswami take? He says there's 10, that the Mahapuranas have 10 and the lesser Puranas have 5. So it's kind of like slightly different ways. Oh, and then the next verse, that Matsya Purana verse, next text. According to some, a Purana has 5 characteristics. So, and Jiva Goswami accepts that. So in other words, you know, there appears to be some room for flexibility, and it's not the end of the world, you know, if there's some difference, but they're coming to the same point. And that's Jiva Goswami's point, that they really are coming to the same point, that the two lists of 10 are actually equal. You know, when you add them up, or when you really compare all 10, both lists of 10, then you'll find neither list has any less or any more than each other, than the other. They only contain, they just contain the same things, that's all. Sorry, what was that? Yeah, because we're only up to 7. There's more to come tomorrow. Yeah, tomorrow. Those others will come, yeah. I don't quite follow what you mean there. Yes, is Manvantara, suttas. Well, no. See, Shukadev, it's not number 5 of Shukadev, it's number 6. But I'm just showing that they correspond. Yeah. The list of the 10. You mean from yesterday? The list yesterday for number 5? No. Sarga Visarga Vritti Raksha Antarani or Mantav Manvantarani. Hetu is, yeah, number 9 in Sutta's list. Yeah. Hetu is number 9. And so we'll come across it tomorrow. 8, 9, and 10 appear and are discussed in text 63. Samsta, annihilation, Hetu, motivation, and Apashraya. Yeah, it's not so precise, or probably not as comprehensive either. Very limited. Maybe, you know, if we find a few topics there, you know, just presented in very limited ways, maybe we can tell them that, you know, we might be prepared to consider the Bible as an Upapurana or something, you know, which of course would shake them up a little. If they know, you know, what a Mahapurana, Purana, Upapurana, and so on, the gradations. But it's scripture, so, you know, you find there's Vamsa, you know, like Vamsa, the lists of the families, Noah and all that, there's all the lists there's some lists, and, you know, there's a bit of course, Ishanu, Katar of different types. And I guess there's a bit of Raksha, or, you know, Noah's Ark would be Raksha, I suppose, or something like that. You know, it's like in Christianity, interesting point, we have very clear, a concept of going from Shraddha to Sadhu Sangha to Bhajana Kriya, to Anathana Vritti, right? Like this. You're not familiar with these terms? Okay. First of all, a little faith. You know, this sounds interesting. Maybe I'll look into it. Then you associate with devotees. Then you actually take it up. Then you start really like progressing and dealing with the obstacles. And then Nishta, the fifth level, you become fixed. You really become fixed up. And then Ruchi means, due to being fixed up, you get a deep spiritual taste. Then Asakti, on the basis of that, you develop a strong attachment to the Lord. Then Bhava, the beginnings of love. And then love for the Lord. So if we compare that to what Christianity has to offer, you know, they have faith of some sort. On the basis of that, you know, they go out preaching and try and get people involved and so on. So then the people go for some sadhu sangha, right? They go to the church. You know, but the sadhus, frankly, with all due respect, in many cases, you know, generally they're meat eaters, for example, and all that sort of thing. So as sadhus, you know, the sadhu sangha is not so good, really. Then they may take up, you know, really get involved and become followers. But the process that they're following, it lacks many components. You know, they're not chanting 16 rounds, for example. What about the regulative principles? Not so much. You know, some piety maybe. Then next level in Krishna consciousness is Anathana Vritti, where you're really trying to get free of these lower desires and all that. Well, you know, they don't bother about that very much at all. In fact, they generally say that, well, you know, it's to err as human. What can you expect? So therefore, you don't find people who are really nishta, fixed up spiritually, actually elevated, you know, basically elevated beyond sinful existence and really absorbed in service to the Lord. And then, you know, the higher levels beyond that, well, as far as I can see, in current day Christianity, they're more or less non-existent. Hare Krishna. Any further questions or comments? The other three, why have we only got up to seven, you mean? We already told you that tomorrow night we'll do the rest. We've only done seven of Sutta. Yeah. Tomorrow night, tune in for the next chapter, next installment. Yeah? You're asking me how many subjects in the Bible? I don't know. You haven't read the Bible much for a long time. It'll be interesting to analyze it. That's all I could say. Uh-huh. Yeah, those are like super deities. Yeah, means Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbha, Shambhu, like that. Hiranyagarbha is the prototype Brahma, the original Lord Brahma. And he is before the Lord Brahma, whose work is Visarga. And Shambhu is there in the glance. I mean, he sort of is the glance. So these are, yeah, very primeval, original forms of demigods. And then Vishnu himself, you know, Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. First of all, it's just Karanadakshaya Vishnu, Mahavishnu. He glances. But then you get Garbhadakshaya Vishnu and Shiradakshaya Vishnu. At this point, there's only Garbhadakshaya Vishnu. I mean, during Sarga, there's no Shiradakshaya yet because there's no ocean of milk yet inside the universes. No oceans of milk. So Shiradakshaya Vishnu has not manifested yet. So Garbhadakshaya Vishnu, Hiranyagarbha, Brahma, and Shambhu. Then there are others also who are elemental demigods. And they're residing, yeah, like in the coverings of the universes. They're higher demigods. Hiranyagarbha Brahma is an original form of Brahma who consists of, he is like the whole creative potency, the whole Rajagun potency. When I say whole, I mean within the whole material creation. And then he distributes some of his creative potency to each Brahma in each universe. But he is before each Brahma. This is all directly or indirectly in Brahma Samhita. Our Brahma. Yes, within each universe. So he is Brahma for the whole material creation. Many universes. He's like the glance. He's essentially the glance of Mahavishnu. Yes, that's right. He's Lord Shiva. He's Lord Shiva. No. Given to Brahma within the universe. Yeah. He wanted to create to do that work within the universe, but he didn't know how, or didn't really understand what the situation was. So then the Lord spoke to him there. No, that's Brahma within this universe, our Brahma. No, they're just parallel personalities, you know. On the same level, at least. Yes, but he comes from Mahavishnu. He is just the glance only of Mahavishnu. So if he is just the glance, imagine what Mahavishnu is like. He's very great. If his glance only does so much, so powerful. Yeah. So these three then, these various demigods actually, they're like on a creational level. Then you come down to demigods on a universal level, meaning each universe, like our universe. So the Shiva, the popular demigod, Shiva, the popular demigod, you know, with the trident, the snake around his neck, and all that. He is an expansion from Shambhu within each universe. Yeah. And Shambhu is a higher level of Lord Shiva than the popular Shiva, who's the popular demigod. Yes. No, not really. That's something else. Hiranyagarbha means that mundane creative principle. Original mundane creative principle. As a person. Well, I don't know if you call him a jiva. I wouldn't say he's really a jiva. Oh, Krishna. Kalpa. It's like every glance of Mahavishnu. Yeah. And he distributes his potency to the individual Lord Brahmas. So they then have the power to create. Yeah. Just like at the end of Brahma Samhita, Krishna actually tells Lord Brahma that you embody this mundane creative potency. Yeah. So now you engage it in my service. So that potency, which is described as being like fire in Brahma, it's just pushing him, it's so powerful. That is coming from Hiranyagarbha. Shambhu and Sadashiva. Well, you know, Prabhupada says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Sadashiva is a pastime expansion of Vishnu, and he has a planet, a Vaikuntha planet in Vaikuntha. So that appears to be, at least according to that statement, the original form of Lord Shiva. He's actually a resident of the kingdom of God. And directly a form of Vishnu, according to that description. Yeah. Are the demigods receiving the worship now? I don't think very much. You know, it's said, isn't it, that the demigods would not come now even to urinate here. Prabhupada said that. I mean, that's a sort of a famous statement of Prabhupada's. So, you know, if they're not going to come to urinate in the best, you know, whatever's the best we have to offer, then I don't think they're very interested in the worship. You know, it's really rinky-dink, the worship, demigod worship. Oh, yes, Sankirtan, that's another thing. That's another thing altogether. Yeah, that they like. But all this so-called demigod worship nowadays, my Lord, it's just a very poor excuse, actually. You know, it's not very, generally not very nicely done at all. Yes. Yeah, 11 Rudras. When our Shiva appeared from the forehead of Brahma, I think that's in the third canto, then the 11 or a number of Rudras came out and they started destroying everything. But then I think it was Brahma told them, no, wait, not yet. So they are the next level down from Shiva. You know, Shiva, there are different levels of Shiva. The popular demigod, to my understanding, is around level 3. And there are 4 main levels. And the Rudras are the next and lowest level. And they're living in Mahakalapur, waiting for the Mahakala, for the great time of destruction. Then they'll come and destroy. But they're waiting. They're just kind of, you know, biding their time. But Shiva, the popular demigod, he's active now. He's active. Well, you know, I think you should read the Chaitanya Charitamrita because it describes it there. But, you know, you can't... The idea is you cannot separate Shiva and Mahavishnu because Shiva is the glance of Mahavishnu. So you cannot really separate them. So it's like Advaita Acharya is an incarnation of an aspect of Mahavishnu then. It's like that. An incarnation of Mahavishnu, particularly of an aspect of Mahavishnu. But I think just read the Chaitanya Charitamrita because it's explained there in considerable detail. Yeah, that Sada Shiva is the original form and Shambhu is the second level. Then the popular demigod Shiva is the third level and Rudras are the fourth level. The Rudras are the fourth level. Okay, how are we doing? He's in Vaikuntha. He's a Leela. According to what Prabhupada says in that chapter about Advaita Acharya, he's a pastime expansion of Lord Vishnu and he has a Vaikuntha planet. You know, I must say, Lord Shiva is a somewhat mysterious character. He's a somewhat mysterious character. And you know, in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, if you've read the part that's been published, is it? Or maybe it's not, but anyway. Anyway, there's one part, I think Gopakumar meets Lord Brahma and Lord Brahma sends him to Lord Shiva. That's Gopakumar, isn't it? Or is it Narada Muni? And Lord Shiva, that Lord Shiva is beyond the material nature. That Lord Shiva. It's beyond material nature. It's beyond Brahma. It's beyond material nature. He's liberated. Completely liberated. He's in the coverings. Yeah, in the coverings of the universes. He's outside the universes. You know, where we are. We're in the sort of the hole in the middle. So he's beyond that. Sorry? Shambhu. and Durga. The original form of Durga is there, because she is the wife. When the glance came, the glance impregnated the material nature. The glance went into the womb of the material nature. So therefore, Shambhu, the glance, is the husband of Durga in the total material creation on that level. Yeah. That womb of Durga, meaning of the total material energy, that's called the Adhara Shakti, the carrying Shakti, carrying potency, to carry the living entities like the womb carries a child. But this is on the level of the whole creation at the time of the glance. Yeah, he's within the universe. And he's married to Durga, Uma Parvati, who's an expansion of that original Durga, the presiding deity of the whole material nature. Speak a little louder. Yeah, the universe is manifested. Yeah, pretty much. You know, what happens, that's also described in the Brahma Samhita in detail, that the universes, like little balls, you could say, they come out actually from the pores of Mahavishnu and then go sort of flying through the sky into the material nature. That at that point it's Mahatattva. And then, by the arrangement of the Lord expands into each one as Garbha Dakshai Vishnu. You familiar with Garbha Dakshai Vishnu, yeah? Then a certain amount of Mahatattva is put in each universe. So the description in Brahma Samhita is those little balls of universes, they expand then. They become bigger because they're now getting filled up. Then, they're not yet. Well, they're coming. They're still in the stem of the lotus flower. Brahma comes out of the lotus flower. Behind him are the rest of the living beings. But they can't come yet until he takes the elements which have been placed in from the Mahatattva, the earth, the water, the fire, and combines them and makes planets, and then makes species. Then they can come and start living. So they're sort of still latent or dormant, but they're in the stem of the lotus coming from Garbha Dakshai Vishnu at that point. And Brahma was there, but Brahma, he came out first. Then he did the work of setting up the universe, then brought out the living entities. Well, they probably go, you know, if they go anywhere in regard to Lord Shiva, they would go to the Shiva in Kailash in this universe. Well, it would depend on their karma. Yeah. In other words, it's not so high, because they're generally materialistic, as you know, followers of Lord Shiva. So, yeah, it would depend on their karma. Okay. In each universe, different... that's true. There are different forms of Lord Shiva too. Five-headed, multi-headed, yeah. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki.